Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
The world we know is gone. No internet. No GPS. No text messages. No podcasts. In a world ruled by the dead, we are finally forced to start living.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Walking Dead TV Podcast, episode 378. This is Russ, and I have Aaron and Rich. We are a Dr. Current short this week.
Mm-hmm. Not so current after all.
No. Doctor, see you next week. Right. That was a stretch.
He's actually down in the basement working on the temperature control.
Yes.
Replacing the batteries on the Roomba.
Yes. Yeah. All right. We don't have much news. We got two episodes to cover this week. My voice is a little wrecked from a cough, so we are just going to roll right into it. So we're going to talk about The Ones Who Live, episode 3, Bye. And we start this episode with a flashback.
Years ago,
an unspecified number of years, with Rick in his pre-military CRM gear. I love that they got their own gear, you know, like CRM logo on everything, which I always think is funny.
Branding is key, so they got that down.
Well, here's what I don't understand is they don't want to be found out. They don't want to be known, but they slap that on everything like it's the Apple logo.
Now, if you don't let people leave, then...
they're not going anywhere.
but of course, we see in this last episode, but I mean, you know, they have equipment that gets lost out there, and everything down to, like, you know, their portable tampons have CRM on them.
I mean, that's just logos. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. It took us this long to get to this show that we find out what the CRM is to an extent.
Keep the mystery.
Show Lost, you know, it started well and ended well.
Yes, exactly. But we see Rick in his CRM gear, and he comes across, I said, I have a note here that says, and this will make sense a little later, cool hair Jadis. So this is like, like long flowy hair Jadis.
I love that scene in Cool Hair Jadis where she eats all the eggs.
Yes. That's funny. She gives the lowdown on what's going on there, like how they operate, and we get a little bit more of what exactly went on and what is going on with her, that she specifically is holed up in this section waiting for Rick because, you know, she knew that he would be there eventually. Which I thought was interesting, that she wants to make sure that they get their story straight and that she's clear with him as to, you know, kind of what the deal is. But we find out the CRM is they're pretty serious about this whole civilization thing. They have this, she says they have a 500-year plan to put the world back the way it was, quote unquote, the way it was. Like,
and my question there is, why do you need 500 years?
Well,
I mean, what are they? What exactly is the plan? I don't know. That just seems like an odd number to me.
Rome wasn't built in a day,
right?
But it was built a lot quicker than 500 years.
Well, like, you
pretty think, much rose and fell in 500 years.
You have to think globally.
Yes.
I mean, it's a matter of, like, I don't think we need to go into exact details, but I'm sure, like, beyond just we make this city work, the idea is to, you know, repopulate the world, get it functioning, have technology that's working, have electricity, have everything that's, like, connected in a sense that gets it back to where, like, we are currently in real life, which, yeah, probably takes a little bit more than some time when the world's population is reduced to what, like 3% of humans?
It's gonna take time. It's just 500 years. I mean, think about where we were in the 1880s. compared to now.
Sure. It's like, I guess I didn't take it too literal either.
That's also, I mean, well, yeah. James doesn't tend to exaggerate too much.
Yeah, I mean, the point is, they have a plan. They have a long-term plan. They're not just thinking of like, well, this is how it is today, and we'll worry about tomorrow. That the point of this is they have a plan for how it is that they feel that they could put the world back the way they want it to and get technology back to where they need it to and how all this is going to function. And that it's not some willy-nilly like, hey, we're just trying to keep the lights on today and we'll worry about tomorrow. So,
Rich, credit to you. Yes. 1880s to now is not 500 years. That's actually a good point. So it's a long time to think about.
Well, I'm just saying, going from the age of steam and everything else through the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, you're right. I gave you credit. You know,
that's all I'm saying is it doesn't seem to be, you know, and I mean, given, yes, the world population is much less, but I'm still thinking max 200 years to get to where back things are now. Maybe even better.
I guess they're thinking in terms of like we want to have like generations established. That's how far our plan is taking us.
Yeah.
I think it goes beyond like the technology aspects of it at that point. It's more of like building.
That makes sense.
Building generational families and what have you. Also, I didn't like that Jada just threw out fries. Don't buy fries then, bitch. I don't like what are you. I mean that in terms of personality, not because she's a woman.
Yes, you would have said the same thing if Jadis was male. You would have said the same thing. Yes, as would I.
Just throw a whole plate of fries in the trash. What's the deal?
That's a bitch move.
Get like, the onion rings then if you want them so badly.
Yes, straight up. Did you notice that her accent seemed to be slipping a little bit?
Minor
quibble, but something I noticed.
I feel like it's tricky with her in general because she's wearing a lot of masks.
I'm not liking her character very much. I can't remember how much I did like or dislike when she first showed up in the main show, but like,
you don't like her as in you don't like because she's a villain and you're not supposed to like her, or like you don't like how they're using her?
How they're using her, I think. I don't know. There's just something about the character that really, really bugs me. And that could be a much more rounded out character. She just seems kind of two-dimensional in a way. Mm. I don't know.
I don't know if I'd say that.
I mean, if she was two-dimensional, she'd just kill Rick. Like, or she'd do something more dramatic. I like that. I get frustrated by the situation that I'm being placed in because of her, which is the show's intention, but I do think that she is...
Yeah, maybe that's it.
I mean, like, naturally, I don't want her to be an obstacle for these two to get back to Alexandria. That's what I want. I want these two to be able to leave this place and go back home and see their kids. Like, that's what I think anyone normal wants to see in this show.
Yeah.
It's just, for me, kind of... And I don't know, maybe this is... And I just... I have it stuck in my head, but for some reason I felt like she was going to be a much better path for what was going on, and it turns out that she's just an ambitious dick.
Oh, see, I just assumed that's what new. She was going to be. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we, I mean, between that and that world beyond, I mean, we know that her outside of Garbage Land, where she was doing all kinds of stuff, I mean, she's a pretty straight shooter when it comes to being a soldier. You know, she's authoritative and has a level of control that is beyond most people, and it makes her a credible threat in that regard. I'm curious how far it's going to go, given that we only have 3 episodes left, and there's still, like, Terry O'Quinn's around doing stuff, and it's like, well, where's all this leading?
Yeah,
how much are we going to get out of the next 3 episodes?
I think we'll get to it. Yeah, more with after the next. I think I'll have more to say on that after the next episode. But
we must just because there's only so much time to do things. Right. And
but I mean, given where we're at the end of the next episode, I think it becomes more apparent that that's a valid question.
Let's get back to this then.
Yeah,
I want to know, like, where's the CRM going in the scheme of The Walking Dead? Because Daryl's off over in Europe and Dead City is like its own thing, so I don't know.
In the future, so it jumps around time a little bit. So this is years ago, then we cut to probably like a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, relatively short period of time, where Rick goes to Thorne and he asks her to help him with Michonne. Like, hey, can you just make sure that she doesn't get classified as an A and get shot in the head, like, and disposed of? That, can you help me out here? And so he goes to her to kind of let her in on what's going on. And then we come back to where we kind of left off at the end of last episode, which is Jadis and Rick's apartment. And this is where she kind of lays things out for him and just says, look, if you two both leave here and mess this up for me and you escape, because I vouched for you, and then I'll, you know, helping get Michonne in, I'm going to drop a dime on you, and we're going to go to Alexandria and just wipe your whole, you know, your whole settlement out. And you know, she's even got like a dead man's switch, you know, with it. It's like, oh, and if you kill me, like, they're going to find all my documents and all my papers and know exactly what I did and how it relates to you. And, they're going to take you all out. So she's making it very clear that, she has leverage on Rick, and she wants him to stay in line.
The thing that gets me is, like, I can, I guess, like, put myself into that, her shoes to a point and be like, I mean, I guess he's like a loose, I don't, like, he's a loose end. But, like, on the other hand, I'm just like, if he so doesn't want to be here, what's he possibly going to do if he goes? And, like, I guess you have to think about it for a bit and be like, well, if he and Michonne are together, then they could have a bright idea to take down the CRM, which he doesn't want because he believes in the CRM. Like, there's a whole, like, extra level to that. But at the same time, it's like, in the immediate now, just like, he wants to leave. Just let this poor man go.
Yeah.
So it's very just like, ah, oh, God, got to deal with this now.
But also, I really think that a lot of nonsense and pain that he and Michonne went through in this episode could have been avoided if he would have just initially, right off the bat, told Michonne, if either of us leaves, they're going to kill everybody in Alexandria. He waits, was it midway through the fourth episode before he finally tells her? It's like, why go to all this subversion of trying to get her to go away on her own when you could have just simply said, this is the situation, and saved yourself a lot of trouble, because either she would have stayed or you could have gotten her to go. I don't know. It just seems kind of odd that he withheld that information from her until they're thrown out of a helicopter. Seemed kind of weird to me.
Yeah.
Which goes back to a lot of the problems that we had in the main show of, if the characters would just talk to each other, a whole lot of situations could be avoided.
True. So at this point, we cut back to Michonne on the wall, and she kind of pulls this ninja move off to save her coworker, where she's taking down walkers on the wall, and her little coworker there gets sideways with one, and she kind of takes the head off of one and flicks it at the other one to stop it, which was kind of a cool move. But again, the whole thing with, you know, with Rick tried to instill in her is, hey, you need to show, like, if you show you're some badass that has all these skills, they're going to know you're an A, and they're going to deal with you as such. And so,
a quick question about was the Grimes 68 or whatever that was painted up there, is that like the, like, he holds a record? Or
maybe, I don't know.
That's what I assumed.
Yeah.
Okay. Cause the way it was kind of faded and weathered, I was thinking, is that something else that has nothing to do with Rick? But then I'm like, that seems kind of odd that it would be Grimes. So then I'm like, 68, he must have held some record for killing that many at the wall or something.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's...
Is that okay?
That's
I didn't know if there was it. Another meaning that I was missing. So
I do. The one thing I do like about this show that I've always wondered with all the other shows and iterations of this universe is the fact that they put people along this wall, and I'm assuming there's probably many of these walls throughout the whole city, that literally just sit there all day and just kill walkers, like to just winnow down. You know, they know it's like a never-ending supply, but essentially through attrition, they're eventually just going to get them all, right? Like,
right.
You know, just – you know, it's one thing I've always wondered. It's like, oh, well, they let them pile up against all the outer walls. It's like, well, why wouldn't they just take shifts and just constantly just stab them in the head as they come up to kind of winnow them down? So I
thought, question.
Yeah.
I agree with this line of questioning.
Well, yeah. I'm also thinking, why don't they, you know, find, you know, how in the main show way back when there was that like canyon full of thousands of walkers and all of that stuff. If they could just take herds down into something like that and just set them on fire, you know?
Well, then they
bomb
then they
have, them.
Yeah, I guess you'd have to bomb them almost. If you set them on fire, then they start roaming and then you just have a bunch
well,
of
no,
them.
Well, no, not if no, you
trap. No, that's why you trap them in an area. That's what we're
saying. Yeah,
yeah. And I don't disagree with you. It is the kind of thing where the second I think about this more, it's like, you guys have so much stuff at your disposal, let alone things that make noise. Like, it wouldn't be hard to, like, have just,
right,
like, a constantly blaring alarm that's way the fuck out somewhere else that will, like, you know, like a path of those kind of things that'll just keep leading them along,
like,
to a special area that's whatever it is, a giant garbage disposal, whatever you want to call it.
Like, you think, you know, that's...
But,
that,
I mean,
if nothing else, they'd be, like, Mad Maxing it, right? Like, they just, like... Uh-huh. Have competitions where somebody's building like this crazy car with 8 billion spikes and you know crazy rims and stuff, and just have competitions where they just mow these things down.
So, like, when you say 500-year plan, it's like, does that plan involve like getting really rid of the walker problem? Because it doesn't seem to be. Like, it seems like you're taking a lot of risks going on random excursions through helicopters with select special forces teams instead of like attacking the problem head on.
Yeah,
I mean, you literally have a wall where six people stab stuff in the head all day. Like, there should be a more economic way of using that time.
Well, it's the post-apocalypse version of Richard Simmons sweating with the oldies.
Yeah,
I mean, imagine the workout that you're getting, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of great people with forearms that aren't part of the the armed forces. Sure.
All right, so then we cut to Okafor's funeral.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Where the general gives his speech, and it's a very, like, again, it's kind of directed almost like at Rick and how he's still on the fence and has distrust over Rick.
Yeah, I was confused, but it felt like, is he blaming somebody? Like, it was a weird...
Rick was in the left seat.
Like, at first it sounded like blaming Okafor. Then I'm like, wait, is it about sacrifice? No, it's about Rick. Like, who is this speech for?
yeah, both sides, you know, somebody that fought on multiple sides of a war. And again, Okafor, so we know he was part of the, you know, the Air Force or whatever, the Marines, and then had to fire on his own people, and then he joined, you know, so again, there was a lot of talk about, you know, somebody that fought on one side and then fought the other. And then we cut outside to Thorne, and she tells her story of how Okafor found her, and she was like out in the desert, and how they kind of had this bit of a face off with each other. And, you know, I take it very much kind of like a Rick thing with her. Like, again, Okafor was looking for, he was looking specifically for people that he could entrust to do things his way. Whereas, you know, the greater CRM had their way of classifying people. So, which, I mean, again, it didn't really add too much. We kind of knew she was in Vegas on holiday to begin with. This just kind of expanded a little bit more about that.
I wrote in my notes, by the way, the score had a lot of Twin Peaks vibe in it this week. It felt, or last week.
Yeah.
I wrote it down because it's like, I got a real Twin Peaks vibe from the music all of a sudden. I was like, this is interesting. Anyway.
So this is where we get more of, you know, the general's not really sure about Rick. He straight up tells him, like, I don't really know how I feel about you. I think Okafor might have been wrong about where your loyalties lie and you know, what's really going on with you. But not enough to, you know, boot him out or to kick him down or, you know, not
too easy.
Yeah, keep him in control of this new top secret facility they're building. But then we find out he promotes Thorne. So basically Thorne takes over Okafor's spot. And so she becomes kind of in charge. And then
it's the right choice. You don't promote the guy that cut off his own arm.
No.
That'd be dumb.
Well, and after this, she's fully drunk the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, she knows, you know, that she has, it's self-preservation, right? You know, she's worried about herself, and she's fully on board with making sure that, even though her and Rick had kind of built this rapport and Rick kind of confided in her about Michonne, she's not going to let that just derail her at all. And she's actually worried that Michonne is going to be a problem in general. But we also see that Rick, he's decided, okay, they're going to, what looks like them making, they're going to make their big escape, right? The two of them, because he's taking notes, he's writing stuff down. He casually hands Michonne the note that tells her where to go. It's not clear at this point that it's just Michonne that he's wanting to escape. It made it seem like, and she was under the impression too, that he would be out there. So she goes to escape. There was that cool Walker scene on the roundabout where they literally push themselves through the bars, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, it was gross. Rotary doors off zombies are really.
Yeah, yeah. But he leaves her a note by the boat. Like, he leaves a boat. She sees there's a dead body there that is in a CRM jacket. And he leaves her a note and says, like, hey, I can't go with you. Like, you know, it's not, you need to go home. It's not safe.
Did he really think this was going to work?
I don't know.
Rick's not thinking all that clearly these days.
Yeah.
True.
So Rick goes back to Jadis and tries to talk her into covering for Michonne leaving. Like, hey, it's real clean. There's a body out there. There's a canoe. You know, you can say, hey, you tracked down this person that was trying to escape and take all the credit and totally cover for it. And then nobody will go looking for her. And then he tells her, you could be a hero with a shit haircut.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
I think it's nicer, her little tribute to Mo Howard.
Yes. But then, of course, we find back on the wall that Michonne didn't go. And Rick is, of course, horrified. And Michonne is just getting after it. Like, she's just
she's pissed off now.
Yeah, so she's super mad. She needs to
let some anger out.
Yeah. And all her coworkers are just, like, in awe of how many she's just going after.
There's a guy on the chalk on the side being like, oh, I got to erase the Rick number now.
Yeah, the Rick number.
call it the Dana number.
And then she finds, you know, because they have all these, like, street vendors and things like that are out there in the outside part of the CRM. And she finds the artist who drew all the pictures on the iPhones. So...
the scene, but it's also like it was so random to me. It was like, oh, okay.
It was so strange because he's like, oh, you know, she mentions, oh, you know, I had trouble drawing the kid, and she says, oh, Carl, and he's like, oh, you know, you said he was a little less trusting. You said the name right off the bat, and she said, you must be Michonne, and I was like, okay, this is real weird. Like,
it is.
They're making dropping a whole point up. Of like being deathly afraid that somebody's going to find out who she is and why she's here. And some random dude that, you know, carves stuff into old CRTs knows everything.
It's a very awkward scene.
It's artist soldier confidentiality. I think that's
apparently.
Isn't that a law?
I just said artist soldier confidentiality.
Like CRM Law 2 or something.
Yeah, it's on the charter.
Yes. Then we get this weird test of Michonne, right? Where Thorne tests her. Is this a whole thing where Thorne is making it like she doesn't know who Michonne is, and Michonne plays along with it and doesn't give, like, she plays along as well and doesn't give up the fact that she knows that Thorne knows who she is? You know, it's like this
whole
game.
Does Thorne know who she is, though? The only thing Rick does is tell her, I want you to take care of this person.
Yeah, he doesn't say.
He doesn't identify that she's the person that he's, you know, trying to get back to or anything like that.
Okay. All right. then I misunderstood that. I thought that was the whole point when he went to her at the beginning of the episode was
she certainly suspects that there's something about this person, and you know, it's TV logic, so she can't possibly figure out what that exact thing is, but like, right. No, he's been very specific about what he's told her. He's simply said, I want you to to back this person up, you know, to make sure that they get in. He's not saying she's a samurai warrior that leads around two walkers at a time because she's f***ing badass. It's like, no, you know, do me a solid.
Yeah, right now she's Clark Kent in the glasses.
Yeah, that's so true.
But with this scene, I mean, it's tense and whatever, yeah. And I'm sitting there like, she's pulling a knife out her back? All right, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. Throughout this whole episode, I was wondering if at some point Rick was going to put a bullet in Thorne's head. Like,
no, I think it makes that tension clear. I agree.
Yeah, so yeah, I thought at least from that, letting me think that, I thought was a good, hey, good play.
And after watching her as Maze work with knives, she's talented. Lucifer.
Oh yeah, I didn't see Lucifer.
Oh, Maze was awesome.
They have this like plow device. It was a little weird at first, like what exactly it was, and it's like stuck in a rut, and Thorne can't get it. So they start clearing more walkers. And then Michonne says, okay, I'm going to show her. I know what's up. And so Michonne grabs the plow, starts pushing it, and it starts, you know, obviously it's got like a pointed front and a stick across the, a bar across the front of it. Starts taking out walkers.
Yeah, it's a cow pusher.
Yeah. And then Rick comes up beside her, and the two of them start pushing this thing, and obviously it has a big light on it, and then it starts making a bunch of noise. And so, you know, they get a pretty good distance out there, and of course they blow it up, and it you know is able to kind of clear away some of the walkers, because I kind of missed a little bit. This is after they've gone to the forward station, because they need to clear out a bunch of the walkers, because all of the brass and all the heads of the CRM are coming in to kind of open or you know, bless this new forward operating base they have. So like there's some big powwow that's coming. So there is like an expeditionary group to come clear all the walkers out to make it safe for when everybody gets there. So,
and they recruit Michonne because she has the new high score on the chalkboard.
Yes. Yes. And this is where it just gets a little tense, because, Rick, it goes to Michonne and it's like, you know, you're getting out of here. We're done. Like, we're broken. This isn't working. You need to get the hell out of here. And you're going back. And Michonne just doesn't know what to think of all this. So it makes for a pretty tense helicopter ride back.
So real quick, I mean, the problem we seem to have is that Michonne can't help but like being awesome as far as like getting stuff done, and it's like, so they have a special mission to move a bomb across a field, and is one that's playing a lot of Helldivers 2 right now. I'm like, yeah, you got to shoot the bugs and get the objective done. I get it. Yeah. So Thorne's not strong enough to move this thing. What else do you do in that scenario? Like, I get the whole like line of command and everybody's like, what was the other plan? Like, you got to have a backup, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's just sitting there like, I can't move the thing. The one thing we have to do here. And so Michonne does the thing. It's like chewing her out. You don't like being shown up. You're the superior officer. Yeah. I get that.
Thorne is one of those leaders that's just like, if it's not my idea, it's a bad idea kind of thing.
Yeah, one of those.
it's like a real Brad Milo,
some would say.
Yeah. it's like, you know, when the teenager that gets to run the shift for the first time at McDonald's, you know, it's their way or the highway.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Fair.
So after all that, they get back on the helicopter, head back to the main base, and the weather's terrible. It's a huge storm, a bumpy ride, and Michonne at this point just decides, okay, that's it. They're over water. She opens up the door, grabs Rick, and they jump out of the helicopter. I think about this episode, that was a pretty badass ending.
Oh, I love the ending. Like, oh, I was still like, I was down for exactly what we're doing here. Like, finally we're going to break out of the routine and do something else. Because as much as I was liking this episode fine, but it's also like, how much time are we going to spend with them having to play down their identity and Jadis being on their back? Like, what else can we do? It's like, oh, okay, we're just shaking that up completely. So, like, yeah, I was all about that. That was great.
Yeah.
Did you say that Michonne spotted Jadis, though, before, like, they got in the helicopter?
No.
Yeah, she did.
Yeah, because they're like, so, like, after Thorne chews everybody out and everything. And also, there's that other thing when that happened, too, on the battlefield when they're, like, fight. Like, Thorne is, like, taking aim at Michonne at one point,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And she's, like, very tilted towards shooting until Rick, like, purposely kills a walker in her path to specifically that I see what you're doing, but just to, like, stop her from doing it. Which is just more.
And I don't know if this was meant, but it kind of gave me an homage feeling to the original when Rick was holding up the rifle at Shane in the woods in season one.
Yeah, for sure. Easily. Yeah. It's a similar kind of theme that's going on there. But yeah, after they get off and after she gets chewed out and everything, Jadis is there and she's talking to Rick. And she's like, she hadn't seen me. And now she's like, oh, now she has. And then, like, Rick has to, like, grab the show and be like, listen, I got it handled. It's okay. Don't worry about this. But, Rich, it does speak to the idea of some information would be good just to know.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we leave this episode on this massive cliffhanger, which they don't usually do. We don't get any big, like, cliffhanger type stuff. We've seen it done at the either mid-season finale or season finale, but it's not too often where we have just episode to episode where we have these big, like, cliffhanger-y kind of moments. So
I suppose. I mean, I guess it's a cliffhanger. It ends in a precarious situation, so that's fine, I guess.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, who shot Mr. Jadis or something.
Correct. All right, so that's where we're at with Bye. So let's give it our Okafors. How many Okafors do you give this one, Aaron?
I gave the last one like 4.5 or 5 or something. So I like this episode. I would say, because I like the other, we'll talk about the next one. This does not matter. I don't know why I'm like stuttering on this thing so much. Like 3.5 Okafors. Fuck, who fucking cares? Like 3.5 Okafors. Like, it's a good episode. I wasn't like blown away by what was taking place, but I really think it's a strong episode of this show based on what we've seen so far. It's the kind of thing where it's not even necessarily like a pieces setting episode because it's just more of the story that's being told because there's not enough time for there to be like pieces being set up. But obviously we are like heading a certain direction and we have to get an idea of what the status quo is to see what that direction is going to be or have an idea of what that direction is going to be. So now we're getting an idea of like just how the day to day is with these two stuck in the scenario. And it's well done. Like, I like it. I think the Walker stuff is fun as usual with these kind of shows and the struggles that these characters are like forced into are like frustrating in a way that's like, it's supposed to be frustrating. So I can go along with that. I think this is a solid episode of television. So yeah, 3.5 Okafors.
Yeah. Rich?
Yeah, I agree. I like this episode. It's kind of, it is putting some pieces into place, but as far as now we're getting the beginning of the current story, whereas the last two episodes prior to this were, you know, what happened since the bridge with these two characters on their own. There's just a couple of things that I didn't like about it. Like I said, Jadis, and maybe it's because it's designed this way, but I don't know. I just really dislike that character or the way they're using her. And then that awkward scene with the artist, it just felt so wedged in and kind of, I don't know, it just didn't fit very well to me. But those are really minor gripes. So, yeah, I give it 4 Okafors. So
nice. All right. I will give it 3.5. I'm kind of like you, Aaron. I enjoyed it, you know, quite a bit. I probably not as much as I did the last couple episodes, but still, you know, quite enjoyable. And again, I thought the ending was pretty. I thought it was a good way to end it, to kind of push the show hopefully in a bit of a different direction. So that's where we end with bye. So
well, we did get some Facebook reviews over here on the old group page, the Walking Dead TV podcast Facebook group at facebook.com/group/WDTV podcast.
And Aaron's working on his new tongue.
Yeah,
you know, we got that's right. I'll edit it all. You'll sound perfect.
The problem is you have to oil it, but the oil does not taste good. But we do have some ratings here. So let me go through those really quick. First up, let's see, we have a note here from Johnny Stower. He writes, "Hey guys, just an FYI, the spot where Okafor was taking Rick and the other chick, Thorne, to have secret briefings and where Thorne and Rick took Michonne is the football stadium the troops were stationed, aka Okafor's wife, where Okafor's wife was at when she got bombed. Maybe the Pittsburgh Steelers field. Keep up the great work, guys. Also, Okafor for the review name is badass. Great job picking that for this. Thanks. And overall, 4 out of 5 so far. Also, sorry, I think this is great. I think they're bombing people that get close, not walkers, as they said. Like Michonne, people got bombed for being close to Pittsburgh."
You know, I don't know if that's supposed to be the Pittsburgh Steelers field or not, but I'd now like to think that it was any time that the Steelers could be bombed. Yay.
That field just has no good luck, though, because, like, you know, first Bane bombed it, and now the Walking Dead's after it. let's see here. Okay. Shota Sonomura has 4 headlines stating breaking news, woman is threatened by other woman out of 5. One, so is this the Secret City or a preview for the new guys? Because Disney definitely feels like they let them see the city before full citizenship is all. Who else gets the feeling Thorne has a crush on Rick? Do we think Thorne has any other thoughts on Rick beyond just...
No, I don't.
I don't think so either.
I was kind of worried that maybe they were going to set her up that way, but this episode made it very clear that, no, that's not the case.
I think it's more, you know, game-recognized game kind of thing.
Yeah.
Two, is it safe to say the beginning non-killed walkers were variants since they only got up when spotted or just lurkers? Trying to think of what happened at the beginning.
I think that they were just older walkers.
I think that's more the case as well.
Yeah.
So I feel like if they wanted to do that, they would emphasize it more.
Yeah.
Three, do you think they came out of a secret camera in the apartment of the man who tried to escape multiple times? So Michonne and Bill are going to have a sword fight. How can they not? Well, yeah, they'll have a sword fight, of course. 4, okay, so Anne is heading to the university for the first time, so we now can place what's happening in the world beyond is in the timeline. We knew that already from the bombing stuff and everything.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping she got Art Guy to draw a picture of the whole family along with RJ, and that's how she'll tell Rick he has 3 kids, not 2. You know, maybe after the fact, but you know, we'll deal with that later on. Family watcher time.
Next episode.
5, I take that back. Thorne doesn't have a crush on Rick. She's in love with Rick. I like these within the timeline realizations later on in the comments. I take that back. She's in love with her image of Rick. That's game recognized game. It's clear Thorne is overwhelmed. It's her preview information and command. She wasn't ready. 6, Thorne needs to show she is in command and why, when instead a good commander knows how to utilize the crew they're given and allow for adaptation for all soldiers, any situation, she's not ready for command. It's not good soldiers follow orders. It's good soldiers get shit done. I can't necessarily agree with that, but I get the sentiment. 7, if Thorne really didn't trust her, she wouldn't have kept her on the bench to collect the team jerseys after. If she just trusted her to take care of the walkers, she probably could have done the task she was given herself instead of her rookie doing it for her. While if Rick makes it back to the CRM, people won't suspect him of leaving. They saw what looked like him chewing out the rookie and her throwing it out of the chopper. Okay. The facts. We are the facts. I'll let you guys... what to name this one, I can't decide. Eh, whatever. We are the facts. that's fine. 1A, the titles of the first three episodes, Years Gone By, are parallel to the premiere TV series Days Gone By, which is, of course, the first issue. 2B, inside the episode, Andrew Lincoln states that the ending of By is one of his favorite endings of any Walking Dead episode that he's done. If I had to guess his second favorite episode, it's when he and Michonne get out of bed naked to point their guns at that one guy. Remember that episode? 3C, Major General Beale was revealed to own a sword, something that may have been alluded to by Oglethorpe's instruction to Rick in Years on to swear on the sword when the time comes. 4D, Rick quotes Negan to Jadis that people are a resource. Jadis herself quoted this in The Last Light of the Walking Dead World Beyond while explaining to Huck how she has traded Rick for her new life in CRM. And 5, according to Michonne's watch, the escape happens on February 1st. If by what the show has shown, 2021, though this is not confirmed in show, the season 2 of World Beyond is taking place, is just taking place, or in the middle. Oh, whoops. Now he has a follow-up. You know what? I just listened to your guys' recap, and it hit me. There's no way the World Beyond season is happening now. It should be done. Thanks for keeping my timeline straight.
Okay, that's what we're here for.
Really, maybe edit these before you press enter. I feel like that might help in narrowing down some of the things we're going over. Kevin Barry writes, 4.25 shit haircuts out of 5. I enjoyed everything about this episode, but I do take away 0.75 because of the mid-air evacuation at the end that caused me to eye roll. I like the expansion of the CRM, and I'm interested in the rest of their 500-year plan. Watching Rick manage his many relationships with the women of this world is good theater. Great stuff so far this season. Darren DePell writes, 5 Okafors helicopters are bad, okay, out of 5. The look on Michonne's face when she saw Jadis was great. I think Pearl was filled in on the CRM's plans, including the destruction of Omaha. She was horrified but can't back out now and won't let anyone else either. Tammy Heisley writes, Sierra wasn't able to finish the episode because she wasn't feeling well, but based on what she did see, we are in agreement that so far this has been our favorite 5 Okafors. P.S. Rick's face when she told Jadis that she had a shit haircut was freaking hilarious. I watched that scene like 5 times. Laugh, 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 skull emoji.
Nice.
Okay.
All right. Well, I hope Sierra's feeling better.
Yes. Everybody's not feeling well these days.
I know. It's like something in the air.
I'm fine. I'm not bad out there.
And Sierra got Russ sick. See, that's what happens.
Was she at the main event in Stafford, Texas last Friday? All right. So we're up to episode 4, What We.
Which is written by Danai Gurira.
Yes, I have that in my note, too. Yes, that she wrote this episode, which is a very dialogue in your feelings kind of episode. I don't have a ton of notes really on this episode because a lot of it was you know just focused on the two of them.
A lot of lines written down and stuff, but yeah, it is a pretty narrow. Now let's be clear to say this is not a bottle episode. This is like
no.
I feel like if some people are already gonna like pitch it as like yeah, it's a bottle. It's just the two of them. It's a bottle. That's not what this is. This episode is laden with special effects. There is all kinds of stuff. Bottle episodes are intended to minimize
reuse
the budget.
Reuse like, things. Hey, we're over budget.
Yeah, we need to scale down and do something that's pretty cheap. This is an episode that has a skyscraper constantly about to tumble. Like, it's not a cheap episode to make something like this.
Yeah, if this was Rick in a coma, remembering all the stuff that happened over the last 12 years, that would be a bottle episode.
Yeah, it's not the Walking Dead clip show.
Yeah.
I mean, but
what if they did a Walking Dead clip show where it's just like Rick and Michonne walking through the forest and they'd be like, remember when Daryl blew up that tank and then they just cut to Daryl blowing up that tank?
But that would actually be pretty funny.
Wasn't it great when Carl got that pudding and we just watch all the pudding? Like, see him get the pudding.
I tend to like dialogue heavy stories, movies and everything. I mean, that's why I'm a Kevin Smith fan and and that's what I liked the most about this episode was the heavy amount of dialogue. Very good. I don't know. It just really, really well written. And I did not realize till the end of the episode that she had written this episode. So
I didn't know that either. I didn't read. I was probably taking notes and I didn't read the fact that she's the writer of the episode. But I agree with you with this show when it wants to really pare down, not just like, you know, tell some separate stories about different characters, which is, you know, we also admire that, but like really dig into the weeds as far as we are going to spend an entire episode focused on, you know, looking at two sides of a scenario and how two different characters react to that. And that's very much the focus of this. And it's, that's effective without getting too far into thoughts on it so far.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially where things end up. So, all right, let's get into it. So we pretty much just start the episode. I'm glad they didn't just waste a lot of time with, oh, this is how they got out of the water. And then they started walking and then they found, who cares? It's like, boom, just
Let's just get them into the room.
We're in this. Yeah. We're in this high rise with this badass radio system and an automated climate and a Roomba and like all this PC that has this Windows 95 pipes, 3D screensaver rocking. it was really interesting. At first I was like, how the hell did they randomly come across a building that has like electricity and all this other? I mean, it kind of bugged me a little bit at first. And then when they, obviously when we get later in the episode, it explains it and it's like, okay, this makes sense.
It's the only time they could see, like, it's the building that's on.
True. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so her and Rick start, obviously based on the way things were left at the end of last episode and what he told her before they got in the helicopter, they start getting into this, most of the show is them getting into pretty heated discussions about why Rick doesn't want to go back and why she needs to go and leave him there.
It's funny because I just watched the Before trilogy for another podcast, and I was like, it got strong vibes in the most dramatic way possible of like, yeah, just two people walking around having conversations.
Yeah. I've never seen any of those movies, Bob.
You ever seen the Before? Oh my God, they're so good.
I have not.
It's Richard, your Texas kin, Richard Linklater. You haven't gone and seen his landmark trilogy.
You know, I. Funny you say that. I don't think I've seen a Richard Linklater movie. I've never seen Slackers.
Slackers is fantastic. Dazed and Confused.
Watched Dazed and Confused.
School of Rock?
You've never watched?
Well, I'll just say this. You have a lot of good movies in front of you if we're like decide to chime in on the Richard Linklater train.
Yeah, which is
he's very... a good old boy from Austin. You'd love him.
I know. It's right. He's from Austin. I was just like, yeah, I've never seen. Oh, I did see Scanner Darkly. I have seen Scanner Darkly.
Oh, there you go. Philip K. Dick in
that. I mean, Slackers revived the indie scene.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just never, it's not one of those things where I've just like purposely been not watched it. It's just, anyway, yeah, I don't know. Just one of those things. It's a hole in my repertoire.
Before you watch your 4K of like... the Abyss, watch Slackers.
He was born in Houston. I didn't know that. He was born in Houston. I know he went to UT. But, all right, anyway, Michonne drops a hint and she says, you know, you don't want to see your children. And it takes Rick a second, but he's like, wait a minute. You said children. You said, you know, more than one. And then, of course, she tells him about RJ and how she was pregnant when the bridge happened. And, you know, he's almost eight and she kind of, you know, breaks down. And then she even says, like, he calls you the brave man. You know, because and that Judith, you know, often tells him the tales of what happened with the bridge and how she saved, you know, that saved them and all this kind of stuff. Again, they have a lot of back and forth. And he keeps wanting Michonne to give him the radio because he lost his radio through all the chaos. Michonne still had her radio and he wants her to give it up. And he even says that, like, look, Jadis will if they find out that I've left or that we've escaped, like Jadis is going to, you know, come after Alexandria and they will kill everyone. So he's adamant about, you know, not, you know, this is why they have to go back is they have to go back because Jadis will drop the dime on them.
This whole, like, as we're doing all this stuff, there's a lot of just good, like, I don't know, blocking taking place in this as we kind of explore the space that they're in and have them move around, do different things. And there's other things happening too. Like there's a scene where, you know, they've gotten out of the whole rain and everything. So they have to declothe, to get all the, like, the, you know, the armor and shit that they're wearing off. And as like Michonne's doing that, Rick sees like an X scar on her back that we'll talk about later on. And there's a lot of like, it's not like male gazey stuff. It's just more of, you know, the person who he loves, he's recognizing another person who he has not seen in such a long time. And like, you know, had, you know, just like looking, and it, the framing and whatnot, especially because they're like producers on the show, so obviously they have a lot of control over like what they're, well, you know, what they feel is necessary to show or whatnot.
Right.
It's right. Just, it's neat to see how that's informing character as far as where these people are as being comfortable with one another and how they, you know, want to admire and appreciate each other or what have you.
Yeah. There's a scene we'll talk about later where they're, again, you talk about the blocking and the setup there's a scene later that again, kind of encapsulates, mm-hmm. you know, how, where they're at with each other. But then they find that, they look outside the window and they see that the helicopter has crashed into the building.
Which good, right? Yes.
Yeah. The helicopter they were on. So A, she saved their lives by ditching them out of the helicopter. Number one, number two, the helicopter's, you know, it's a perfect story.
Presumably,
right?
It died. So there's, yeah, our, it's there's like, our okay, alibi. Now,
yeah, Jadis is going to know we're dead. So, you know, problem solved. Like, okay, you don't need to go back because Jadis is going to find out we escaped. They're just going to assume we died because the helicopter we're in crashed into this building. And then he still tells her like he's not going home. He's yeah, not.
I wrote Rick says no question mark.
Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. He's like, no, I'm not going home. And he, you know, tells her that he has to change it from the inside and that, you know, he can make it to where it's safe for them because he's convinced that, okay, fine. Jadis knows we didn't escape. So she's not going to sick the CRM on Alexandria. But at some point, they're going to either come across Alexandria or they're going to expand what they're doing and they're going to see them and then they're going to kill, you know, everybody. They're going to kill their entire family.
And that's so he has to. Now at this point. It's just,
yeah, exactly. To me, it just felt like, okay, there's something else going on with him where he feels like he can't go back. Like
clearly that's part of it. But like, you know, just looking at it, it's like, Rick, come on, guy, you're not fooling anybody here. Like you're just making up reasons now.
Yeah. The Jesus complex is maybe taking a little too far. But he's convinced that he can change it from the inside, that was the whole point with Okafor. And now that he's gone and he sees that, you know, again, and what we saw from Thorne in the last episode, you know, Rich, you were even saying, so he brings it up again. It's like, well, Thorne is completely drinking the Kool-Aid now. And I can't count on her. I'm the only one that can put this right, which again is very arrogant and naive on his part that he's one person and can literally change the direction of this entire, like, very structured, rigid, very wide organization too. It's not like even the place they're at isn't the only CRM facility and the CRM, you know, leadership, you know, so the fact that he could, you know, literally just be the only one, at least with Okafor, he was kind of building a coalition. I mean, obviously it was just Rick and Thorne at that point, but, you know, had he lived, I mean, I'm sure the intention was there's going to be more Ricks and Thorns out there and eventually we'll get enough of them to do things the right way. So yeah, the fact that Rick has a bit of a God complex here to think that he's the only one. And it gets pretty heated between him and Michonne where they,
she's pissed. She's like, yeah, I'm out. I'm done. Yeah. Get me out of here.
So she leaves. And Rick kind of sits there for a minute and he's kind of breaking down. And then he decides to go after her as a helicopter is incoming. Like, and we find out that the helicopter's coming in and destroys the other helicopter, which makes sense. I mean, that's what you do. You don't leave ordnance and equipment around for other people to, you know, pick it up and use it or get intel or, you know, whatever. So they destroy that helicopter. So again, because at first I was like, well, if they find that there's only two bodies in that helicopter and not four, that's going to, and then when they blow it up, I'm like, okay, well, there goes that excuse. Like they literally blew it up. So there's no expectation that there would be bodies in there. But obviously all that, explosion and everything else causes, you know, tremors. It lets a bunch of walkers loose.
Now, and this building that we're in, do you, does the CRM know of this build? Like, is this a CRM, like, building in any way whatsoever? Do you get that impression? Or is it just, so. Like, no, a no, building no, no. that's its own
I got thing? The impression it was another survived group well, that were trying to remake their own thing. And
yeah,
I think we learned that in that little lab or whatever.
Well, Michonne Fine, yeah, because so, well, yeah, that's in my next set of notes here. But Rick actually goes after Michonne because he realizes that he's made a mistake and that, you know, he's
being a dick.
Yeah. So he goes after her and finds her, and that's where they end up in this, like, because they're desperately trying to get away to some sort of safety, because now the building is unstable. There's a bunch of walkers that are literally coming in on them. They don't have any weapons. They don't, you know, they don't have any, you know, armor or, you know, anything at all. They're just kind of fending, you know, sticks and knives kind of things.
This felt like I was playing a video game without, like, the overhead display on. So I was like, I don't know the meter of which this building is collapsing. So I need, like, I'm just constantly, like, tense. I'm like, get out of there already. Don't go back to the apartment. Like, you're just, like, waiting for them to leave.
But she finds a letter from the guy in the building. He's like, hey, we tried to make this work. We tried to build, like, a great thing here. And you get the impression, I forget if it outright says it, that this guy was, like, some kind of engineer or technical genius or whatever. So, you know, they were able to wire up the building and get power and, you know, kind of modern conveniences and stuff. And things just kind of went south. It just, it kind of hits home that this is, it kind of reinforces Rick's point a little bit, and it kind of reinforces what we've seen in this show so far, that every time one of these groups of people or society spins up, something happens and it falls apart. Like, we, you know, I guess we've seen it more so on Fear probably than we have anywhere else. But, you know, these little groups get together and they start something, and something happens and it all goes to shit. I mean, and so,
like, that was the Walking Dead's thesis for, like, much of it until they got to Alexandria. Then Rick shifted over to be like, we have to hold this place. It's got to be ours. And then he, you know, wasn't on the show anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But this poor bastard offs himself by he electrocutes himself. Like, he wires him up to the electrical panel and, like, sticks the things on his head. Is that, like, what you guys
wanted him that way?
Yeah. I mean, he was clear he wanted to off himself to where he didn't come back as a zombie. So he basically,
he fried his brain,
his own brain, which is pretty gruesome.
Pretty hard.
And then Rick and Michonne, they end up in a gym, like a workout room, and they start again having the banter back and forth, and they go at each other. And one of the things you said earlier about, like, the blocking and stuff with this, they're having this conversation, and there's literally a wall between them, you know, as they're having this argument. And I'm looking at it going, oh, that, again, more symbolism, metaphor, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it, where there literally is a wall between their two points of view on, you know, how they want to, you know, go about these things.
Yeah, it's good. It's the kind of thing where even if it's focused in the right sort of way, where regardless of how on the nose or whatever is, like, it's not like they're trying to talk around any points here. They're talking about very specific things as far as this character wants this and this character wants this. They both want one thing, but they both can't get it the way they want it exactly. So here we are, like, we're stuck if we have to, like, debate each other.
It's almost like, I feel like Rick has a bit of PTSD too, right? Like,
easily. No, for sure. Oh, he's got Stockholm syndrome up the wazoo. He's been there for like 9 years. So he's busy.
Yeah. How can I go home? Because for the last 8 years, this is what I know. Like, how am I going to fit? It's almost like, how am I going to fit back in? How am I going to look people in the eyes? How am I going to, you know, relate to my children who have, you know, grown up with, you know, it's just all those things. And so for him to be able to kind of,
he's also spent more of his life with the CRM than he did with Alexandria and the original group. I mean, what was it, 6-7 years at the most before the bridge, from between the fall and the bridge?
Pretty close, yeah. And he's been here, I mean, if RJ's almost 8 and she was maybe 3-4 months pregnant with him, so you're talking over 8 years at this point. So, yeah, he's been with the CRM for about 8 years. So, Yeah. Anyway, so I mean, to me, it kind of adds to, you know, because some people are like, well, why is he being a dumbass and not wanting to go back? And it's like, I think a lot of that plays into him. It's just this whole like, I'm an outsider now, and the shame, the guilt, the fear, like everything else. I think
it's why you have these episodes. Like this is like for a show like this, it's only six episodes long. The fact that we're getting this extended discussion between these two people. I really hope it informs what the rest of the season is going to be, because we have so much of this stuff, quote unquote, out of the way. But there's a lot of use that comes from having these two people really dive into their characters and give us an idea of like what it is that's happening here, instead of just rushing through it in a way that other Walking Dead shows have.
Right. No, absolutely. I like the little banter. Again, I think, Aaron, you mentioned a few times. The fact that Andrew Lincoln and Danai Gurira are producers on this show, there's a lot of the like little banter that they had, like leaving the exercise, you know, room before, you know, while they go in the stairs before that like chandelier falls on. There's like this, you know, kind of friendly, playful banter and ribbing between the two of them.
Yeah.
That I thought was really cute and just kind of added a little bit of fun to it, even though they've had this very tense episode. And then we get this little bit of levity.
When they're doing what they're doing, like one stabs one in the head and they stab, it's like, I had this. And it's
yes.
It's just stuff that's there. I literally wrote playful in my notes.
Yeah.
Cause there's not a lot of action this episode, but when they do it, it's just like watching cool hallway scenes, people fighting zombies. And I'm like, yeah, all right, this is cool. Get down for this.
Yeah. So yeah, as they try and get away, a chandelier falls and traps Michonne under it. And so then Rick has to try and get her out of it. And so she's trying to fend off walkers as they come, and Rick is trying to get them as well. And so eventually they're able to do it. They're able to get this, you know, chandelier up so that Michonne can get out from being trapped under it. And they end up going back to the room where they started. And this is a scene where we get where they kind of, I guess at this point they kind of, I would say they make up, and Michonne catches him up on her scars, like, and tells her, you know, that Judith got taken and like, you know, all this other kind of, you know, all the things that happen, you know, when again, cause Rick, you know, she hasn't been super forthcoming about everything that's happened while he's been away, as far as what's gone on with Judith and you know, with RJ.
Is this right when they get surprised by the Roomba?
I think the Roomba happened earlier. It was when the Roomba was just kind of around.
I love Rick's reaction.
Yeah, what's that?
She's like, yeah, I had one before everything fell. Like, she had it. She actually had a Roomba.
It's got a Roomba. It's got its own Alexa running the temperatures.
But yeah, so they kind of have this, you know, this pretty tender moment, you know, between each other, you know, finally after all this time. And then the building starts really falling apart and they're like, look, we have got to get out.
We got to get out of here.
And Michonne is like, no, we are not leaving until we know what the next steps are and what we're doing. Like the way I took it is Michonne's like, look, if you're still hell bent on going back to them, then we're just going to sit right here because we are going to hash this out and we're going to have it out. And this is where we get a really, really emotional scene from Andrew Lincoln where he just completely breaks down. And he said the moment he said they took everything from him, they took Carl. And she's like, what do you mean? And so, you know, we saw in the first episode where he kept having these dreams and thoughts of him meeting Michonne, like in a perfect world, you know, on a sunny day on a bench and that, you know, talking to each other and that whole bit. And it happened multiple times. And what we find out is it started with him dreaming about Rick or about Carl and him and Carl, you know, walking with each other and doing it. And then eventually he stopped, you know, Carl just disappeared. Like in his own mind, he couldn't even, you know, envision who Carl was anymore. And so then he started dreaming about Michonne and then he lost, you know, Michonne too. Like then he stopped, you know, thinking about Michonne too. And he's like, I just, you know, I can't do that. You know, I can't go through that again and you know, lose you all again, that I have to know you're safe. And he just loses it.
It's good stuff. It's good work on his part. You know, St. Carl meant a lot to all of us. So,
yes.
But no, there is a good work kind of Lincoln here as far as just like really letting it all out and splaying emotion all over the place.
It's, and he just had to kind of hit rock bottom and let it all out for him to realize, like, okay, I've you know, basically it's like a catharsis, right? He just, you know, he gets it out of his system. Mm-hmm. And then Michonne gives him a phone with a picture of Carl. And again, a super sweet moment because he makes a point of, he almost made it sound like, I don't even remember what my son looks like. I can't see his face anymore.
I'm like, really? He had half a face. Like, it's a pretty memorable guy. Get together.
Yikes.
It's not that long. It's your child. You know what he looks like.
Yeah. Anyway, so she gets on the phone with the picture of Carl. And at this point, they suit up. Like, they suit up and they head out, and they leave the building before it collapses, and they find a car that's
go in an elevator, and I'm like, don't go in an elevator while a building's collapsing.
Well, it's funny, too, because it was almost like Chekhov's elevator, right? Because they're like, there's 5 minutes worth of power left in the elevator, and then like, when it said there's 2 minutes of power in the elevator and it kind of glitched, I'm like, oh, don't tell me they're going to be stuck in this elevator. And then the next scene, they're running away from the building.
I was surprised they took the elevator at all. The building is falling down around you.
That's what I'm saying. Don't take an
elevator. Why would you take the elevator?
I don't know. I thought it was a great moment of tension because I literally thought they were going to be stuck in that elevator. It was
certainly tense because I'm sitting there screaming, get out of the fucking elevator.
I was like, why are they getting it? I'm like, you don't do it in fires. You sure as hell don't do it when the building's coming down.
So they find this car, and it's been like converted to be, you know, like an electric vehicle that runs
it's
off
a of hybrid.
Like, yeah, like a hybrid vehicle.
It's fully charged and it has like ethanol in the back seat. It's like, oh, yeah. It's a hybrid.
But it's a stick.
And it's also standard.
It's a manual transmission hybrid.
It's a manual transmission electric car.
I kept thinking, like, is this a dream? Like, what's happening right now?
Yeah, which is nonsense. But it made for a funny moment because Rick gets in the driver's seat and he's like, oh, I can't drive standard. And so the Michonne's like, are you kidding me? And the two of them have to switch. It's like, and then they're kind of making out in the middle of it. It was just a really, as ridiculous as it was, it made for, again, a nice moment and a funny little bit.
It's a good, but, like, because you're spending this entire episode down in the dumps with these two going into emotional territory and dealing with the ramifications of making big choices that affect the nature of their survival. And it's like, it's nice to see them get a win. Yes. Especially since I imagine there's going to be a bit of drama coming up in the next few episodes. So like this is at least something optimistic to look at as we kind of round out this half of the season.
Yes. And so they drive off, in their crazy hybrid ethanol car, truck, I should say. And that's where we end the episode. So, how many Okafors do you give this one, Aaron?
I give this a 4.5. I think this is a really good episode. This is just, you know, you have two actors that are putting their all into this. It's the kind of episode that feels like why Lincoln and Guerrera, like, wanted to sign up for something like this. Because it's like, hey, if we're going to come back to this thing and, like, make this a whole thing out of it, let's, like, have some real character stuff to work with and, like, get to act. And I think it delivers on that front while staying true to who these characters are and still gives them, like, Walker action to deal with. Like, it has the best of a lot of worlds coming together here in the right kinds of ways. And it's, like, it's both plot-centric but not, because there's not, like, momentum happening here in terms of forwarding the story. But, like, it is focused as far as we want to address the nature of our situation, which in turn allows us to enhance our character. So it's the best kind of story structure they could choose if you're going to focus on a couple of characters and keep in mind the rest of the season. It's not like the season goes on pause. It kind of does, but it doesn't go on pause as far as the varying threats that are still in their lives. It's addressing them directly while having their own emotional like turmoil being dealt with. So no, I think this is it's a very clever episode as far as what its place it occupies within this season, and it's just well made. If you have to collapse a skyscraper on a AMC TV series, I think it did a pretty good job of visualizing that. So yeah, 4.5 Oka Force for me.
Yeah, Rich.
Yeah, I agree with what Aaron said, and I mean, to me, this is probably, I don't know if it's the best episode of Walking Dead ever, but it's definitely one of my favorite ever. I mean, the roller coaster it takes you on through the whole thing of these lull dialogue moments and, getting into the emotional bits of it, up to these massive tense situations and, fighting walkers off with her trapped under the chandelier, and then back to just, some dialogue and some emotional stuff. And then the whole thing of them stupidly getting in an elevator with the building coming down around them, just that back and forth. I mean, it really, really was a well done episode. It was well written. It was well shot. It was well directed. I give it 5. I think this is one of the best episodes of Walking Dead we've ever had.
Nice.
I might be underrating it, because you're not wrong. Like, it's especially of like these spinoffs. This is probably the best episode we've had of these all the spinoffs that we've had.
I'm also going to give it 4.5. I think from a performance perspective, it's pretty amazing. And again, even though we only have 6 episodes to work with, the fact that they're, willing to give a full episode to kind of devote to these two characters, I thought was pretty well done. I think given, how long we've been waiting for this show I would feel like we'd been shorted if we didn't get like quality time between these two with each other. And if they were just constantly forced to being either pushed apart or, dealing with, them with other characters, I feel like that would have been a bit of a short shrift. So even with 6 episodes to work with, I think this is an important detour, if you will, to take. So, 4.5 for me. What did the Facebook groups have to say?
Okay, back on the Facebook group, we have Kevin Barry with 3.5 Lovers Quarrels out of 5. I was expecting an episode like this one focusing on Rick and Michonne to get them back on the same page. Both actors sold it, and there needs to be a web series featuring the Roomba wandering the halls of that building. Thumbs up to that idea. It was a fun episode, but I'm curious to see how the story wraps up in 2 more episodes. Tammy Heisley has, holy shit, Andrew and Danai acted their asses off in this episode. I loved every moment of it. Sierra hasn't watched it yet, so I'll be using that as a perfect excuse to watch this episode again. 5 Oka Fours. Richard Cherry Topper Terrington writes, 4, will someone please sort that heating thermostat out of 5? I honestly thought they could have ended Rick and Michonne's story with the closing of this episode, driving off into the sunset. All in all, a really good episode. And Shoto Tsunamura writes, 4 10 Penny Towers out of 5. 1 enjoyable opening song. Rick, you think talking about my kids in casual conversation is going to make me see Reason Woman? The Walking Dead marriage counseling edition. Hide everyone we know. Where Ohio? There's nothing in Ohio. What next? France? How would we get to France, let alone know anyone that could help us? 2, was it the storm that caused the helicopter to crash, or pilots being distracted, that their sergeant commander just got tossed out by a random rookie? This is what Rick's been wanting for eight years, and he's like, nah, I'm mad too. As far as that,
it was
the storm. Yes. You don't hit a building because somebody jumped out of your helicopter. That's just not how it works. 3, Rick says they're not his people, but he's acting like they are now. They're coming for you home eventually. They're coming for all communities. Their 500-year plan does not have a let others run out to see their own towns forever. 4, as a former lawyer, Michonne should have left with this line, I expect the child support check next month. I would have also expected, and since you didn't ask, Daryl has a dog now. I love the red flashlight on Rick's uniform.
Didn't he have dog before the bridge?
I'm almost absolutely sure he did. But Dog's become such a main character now, so, you know.
Yeah.
5, it was a chandelier, a stairwell. C, all they need was sex. The second recommendation the marriage counselor gives to all their patients. 6, forgetting what Carl looks like is powerful stuff. It also means Benjuro couldn't get Carl's... Is that the artist's name?
Oh, it must have been, yeah.
Couldn't get Carl's likeness right. Rick couldn't give him a good description, but Michonne did. What's hard about Carl? He's got a big hat. He's got some stringy hair and one eye. Like, come on, guys. This is a hard description to write. Got a little cherub face. Let's see. 7. Kind of cutting close here with this building, eh, guys? You could have saved the Rumba, you monsters. A slower episode from the last 3, but necessary. The fact. Where are the facts? 1, the episode is written by Ignat Guerrero, plays Michonne, and the episode insider, Scott Gimple, reveals that she basically took over as showrunner for this episode as well. 2, Michonne states that RJ is almost 8, placing this episode around 8 years after What Comes After. This likely means that The Ones Who Live takes place during the long time, during the year-long time skip in Rest in Peace, as RJ is 8 by the end of The Walking Dead. All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
And that's what we got.
We got through these two. So we got two left to go.
And I mean, I'm just like, what are they going to do in 2 episodes? Because there's no way they're taking down the CRM or anything. That would take a lot more than 2 episodes.
So like, so that's my, there, that's where then we can get back to that question. So like, what do you think is like the operating goal here with the CRM? Do you think there's some future series we don't know about yet? Because I don't think, like, the Daryl Carroll show or Dead City are going to be like, and now we take on Locke. I don't think that's part of their thing.
Well, and I was trying to remember, in Dead City, was there anything about the CRM?
No, you know, like they got the whole...
So I'm wondering if the CRM is gone and destroyed by the time Dead City takes place.
It's one possibility, or just that the island of New York City, of Manhattan, is just like, there's no like necessity of going there for them. Like, it doesn't, you know, it's closed. It's, yeah, escape from New York. Like,
but its own thing. Across the way and on the mainland and everything, there's this whole fiefdom or whatever it is with all these sheriffs and all of this structure that they have. That's not that far from Boston, from Philadelphia. You know, I'm just, I think that the CRM, and maybe we are going to get a series or a movie or something that explains what happens with them, because if they have this plan going on, maybe that, of course, maybe by the time Dead City, they're still just stabbing walkers through the wall.
What do you think?
Trying to whittle them down.
I think they're going to want to do more with this, because I think to try and wrap this up in 2 episodes, I think is going to be way too, I think it's way too ambitious and way too, I think it's going to end up being
like, I'm sure Jadis will get wrapped up in some way.
Yeah. I'm almost wondering if the wrap up is that they find a way to leave the CRM in a better place where it's not so, like, where it's, they find a way to, I don't know, put them on a better path or something like that. I just don't see, I think if they find a way to wrap it up, so to speak, either destroy it, quote unquote, it's going to be way too contrived. I think it's going to happen way too fast and be, given the quality we've seen in this show so far, to me, that just seems like some like Fear the Walking Dead shit. Like, if they decide to, you know what I mean? Like, there's too much to do to make that happen. That if they did it in that short of a time, it's not gonna feel natural.
Have Andrew Lincoln and Ignat Guerrero, have they stated that they're not up for more Walking Dead, or and this is it for them, or? Because I'm wondering if maybe this ends with them getting back to Alexandria, all of that stuff, the reunion and everything else, and then it kind of ends on a looming danger of the CRMs out there, and then maybe they do another series, but it's not The Ones Who Lived, because that was just specific to these two characters and their journey.
I think that these two are probably done with this series. Because, well, for one thing, Nagara just has other things that she wants to do. But they certainly, I don't think, they don't dislike doing this show. And so, like, if there's an opportunity for them to, like, do another thing down the line that's some kind of, like, crossover thing between various things, and, you know, they back up a couple Brinks trucks into their yards, like, yeah, I wouldn't rule out the possibility of the, or they just both die and we never see them again, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility of some kind of, like, eventual thing, maybe later on. Just depends on like how well the Dead City stuff and the book of Carol goes. Like, I think that
I personally, I don't see Dead City going more than one more season.
Like,
I don't know. Like, to me, I personally think they probably could have found a way to make that a one season deal, a one and done. But I can't see it. I don't see that there's enough story there to make it go beyond that.
I didn't dislike Dead City, but it doesn't have the legs for a longevity.
Yeah. I think the Daryl show, I mean, because they could, the only reason I say that could have some legs is because like, he could be like, okay, I'm done with France. Now I'm back in the States, and they could do, you know, go in a whole completely different direction.
Well, so that's the other thing too. Like, as much as I want to see the Rick and Michonne reunited with Judith and he meets his son and all of that, I more even want to see a reunion between Rick and Daryl. I mean, yeah.
I almost envision this as being them leaving this in a way where they can continue the story of the CRM as its own thing. Not have it cross over with any of the other shows or whatever, but they could continue the story of what is happening with this show. Internally.
I'm not that interested in, I mean, I'm interested in the CRM, but I'm not that invested and interested in them to watch just a show about them.
I think there's some interesting things you could do. You know, you've got Terry O'Quinn, you've got Pollyanna McIntosh, you've got Lizzie Ann Brandt. I think they could bring some more folks in where there's, you know, they can add some intrigue and some, you know, make it less about the dead and more about, you know, maybe the kind of the political maneuvering within the CRM and competing agendas. And I don't know. I don't see this wrapping up with a nice bow at the end of it. And it's like, oh, they beat the CRM and now everybody's fine. And
well, I mean, honestly, it's now given AMC another 500 years of programming. So
yeah, there you go. I mean, the one thing I'll say is that, I mean, given that the ratings are so high for this, I wouldn't rule it out if they, you know, I think it gives them some leverage to offer, you know, Andrew Lincoln and Di Guerrera to come back and be able to pay him because they know that there's going to be a payoff to it. But it also gives them enough of an audience that if they want to do more with the CRM and the characters in the world they're building here, they've got enough runway and enough, you know, eyeballs that have seen at least this show to hopefully, you know, carry forward. I don't know. I just don't think they're going to be, I don't think the show ends with the death of the CRM. Like, I just don't.
I agree.
I don't either. Yeah.
All right. Well, we will find out as there's two more episodes left. Who knows? Maybe they'll do the thing where like after episode 5 airs, they'll be like, oh yeah, there's one more season of the show that they've both signed up for. Like, you know, who the hell knows? I don't think that's going to happen, but you never know. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Aaron, where can folks find you on the internet? You've been busy these days.
Pretty busy these days. I host a podcast called Out Now with Aaron and Abe. My friend Abe and I host this podcast where we talk about the weekly movie releases, and we have a lot of fun bonus episodes, including commentary tracks every month. Everything I do can be found on my personal blog. The code is zeke.substack.com, where you can find all my movie reviews, which are right for Leap Entertainment, and my Blu-ray reviews, which are right for Why So Blue. And I'm on all the socials at Aaron's PS4.
Excellent. Rich?
On all the socials at Chubtoad01.
Cool. And you can find me here at hhwlod.com on this very podcast, as well as over with Mr. Taylor when Dr. Curran is with us over Gotham by Geeks, our Batman-centric podcast. And you can find out, find all the stuff he's got going on in the Taylor Network of podcasts. So definitely check him out over there.
Including a soon-to-come Babylon 5 podcast we're working on.
That'll be fun. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week. So until there's no more room in hell and dead walk the earth, stay out of the elevator.